It's Sunday morning, time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter, brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me this morning, and I hope you enjoy the show as I talk about issues of national influence that I think are going to affect those of us in the Midwest. Listen this morning, even though most of this is going to be taking place on the East Coast in Washington, and certainly everything that's been in the news the last couple of weeks with the new president and the Congress. But I'm going to talk about hopefully a few things that may not have surfaced, but which I think are going to have a big impact on how we proceed in the conservation world and the outdoor recreation world over the next few years, and most importantly, immediately. And the first thing that I want to talk about is what's happened with something called the Land and Water Conservation Fund. This was an issue I talked a great deal about over a year ago when Congress, for the first time since the Land and Water Conservation Fund, otherwise known as LWCF, which is a tax on royalties, it's a royalty tax on offshore drilling, of which the Department of Interior receives a portion of these funds, and it was set up over 50 years ago to help fund outdoor recreation, access parks, many of the parks in the city of all over America, in the city's urban areas, have been funded with LWCF, Land Water Conservation Fund, acts funding. It has funded all kinds of land acquisition, access, boat ramps. It's been the primary driver of providing public access to the outdoors in America through access of boat ramps, trails, providing equipment in parks, providing land acquisition. And it is supposed to be funded at about $900 million a year. But Congress, in its inimitable way, has been writing IOUs against this and only funding it to the fund to the tune of $200 to $300 million a year. And the actual IOU, which will never get repaid, is over $3 billion over $30 billion. I'm missing it. Easy to drop a zero when you're only talking about billions. Is over $30 billion that we, the citizens of the United States, are owed from the money that Congress has borrowed from this for improving outdoor recreation access in natural areas in America. It's a little bit like the Social Security Trust Fund that they keep borrowing from. In this case, though, they're actually stealing it because it's never coming back. So a year ago, LWCF was up for reauthorization, and the Republicans in Congress, particularly from the West, were adamantly opposed to the reauthorization of LWCF because it has led to the acquisition of so much more federal land in the West. And we're having, as I've commented numerous times, the Sagebrush Rebellion is live and well, with Western states not wanting the federal government to have any more influence on them when it comes to managing lands. And if you're from Nevada or Utah or Idaho, you fully understand why, because they own most of those states. In any event, LWCF, instead of being reauthorized, was temporarily extended. Now, in the first couple days of the new Congress, and I believe we'll have the strong support of President Trump, there is a bill putting forward that permanently authorizes LWCF at a level of funding at $900 billion. And there is an attempt to have an additional $1.3 billion added to it for a total of almost a $2 billion fund on an annual basis to fund the natural resources of America. This, if it happens, would be absolutely seismic in its impact on the ability of us to improve our national parks. I mean, just think of Yellowstone, Yosemite. Think of all of our crumbling park infrastructure from lack of maintenance. This would be ensuring that the proper amount of funding that was coming from the revenue, it's not a new tax on anything. It's simply saying that the funds from offshore oil and gas drilling, a very small percentage of them, $2 billion a year, would come to the outdoors of America. And the rest of it, which is tens of billions more, goes to all the things it's going to. So it's not a big ask. but it is going to be a hurdle to get over the opposition of basically about 10 or 15 Western states that don't like this idea of LWCF. So the reason I bring it up today, it is absolutely the most important bill in conservation right now. It's trying to work its way through Congress, and the early indications are that President Trump will be very supportive of this. So let's hope that LWCF does move forward and that we could talk later this year about one of the great successes in the extension, the permanent reauthorization of LWCF. And once it gets reauthorized, then, of course, it has to be funded. And it's easy for Congress to authorize things. It's hard for Congress to fund things. So one of the issues that is being attempted is to require a permanent funding, not just a reauthorization, but a permanent level of funding so that Congress cannot once again come in and undermine the intent of this bill, which they've been doing and using LWCF as a piggy bank. And it's been suggested often that the companies who pay this tax ought to say, we're not paying it anymore unless you use it for the purposes for which it was intended. It is intended to benefit, to mitigate for the environmental damage of offshore oil and gas drilling, to make America's interior and coasts better from a natural resource perspective. So the Land and Water Conservation Fund, put it on your calendars, is going to be one of the epic, absolutely critical efforts of this Congress to try to fund our infrastructure for parks, to fund access, to get boat ramps. City of Chicago benefits. Everybody benefits. So that's the big deal in Congress right now, and hopefully we'll have positive news coming on it soon. The other big deal, which actually has been in the news, and I'll spend just a moment talking about it, but from a bit of a different angle, is President Trump immediately issued executive orders to restart to give the go-ahead to the Keystone Pipeline and to the Prairie Pipeline, which runs through the Dakotas. This is hugely important for the transfer of energy in America. But what I want to talk about is the missed opportunity from a negotiation point of view. And that is the Obama administration, as we all know, was dead set against these pipelines, dragged them out for years, and ultimately did not authorize them. It was absolutely apparent that if there was an administration change, whether it was now or in 2020 or in 2024, that the pipelines were going to go ahead. It's one of those things that's never going to go away. The pipelines needed to be built as far as the energy industry was concerned. So it was really an issue of negotiation. And my point of this discussion for those of us who love the outdoors is support the pipeline or not, that's irrelevant. We lost a tremendous ability to negotiate for the advancement of natural resources, public access, hunting, fishing, with a position that said, we will not build the pipelines unless we get X. And I was involved in some of those discussions about what X might have been. And the energy companies stand to profit enormously from this building of these pipelines. And there was a lot of room for them to give concessions. Those concessions now are basically off the table because the current president said, we're going to build the pipeline. He signed an executive order. So what is the interest of the energy companies to want to come to the table and negotiate a very strong environmental mitigation for the pipelines? There is none. It's gone. So I think that we in the conservation world lost the ability to, frankly, get a really powerful set of mitigations for the building of the pipelines. Now the pipelines are going to go ahead. The energy companies are going to spend some money on mitigation, but it's not going to be the negotiation that there might have been, and this could have been a windfall for particularly the area of the country these pipelines were going through as far as improving elk habitat, improving sage-grouse habitat, improving aquifers, improving public access. You can run the absolute gamut, if you will, of ways that the pipelines could have benefited the natural resources of the heartland of America. And now only a small fraction of that will be done. So the negotiation tool was lost. And I think that was a failing of the past administration. It's not a political statement. It should have attempted to say, all right, let's go to the negotiating table and let's talk about what the concessions look like to build the pipeline. What are you going to do? What's in place? What can we strive for instead of just saying, no, the pipeline's not going to be built, and that negotiation never took place. So we, those of us who love the outdoors in America, are the real loser for that missed opportunity. And the pipeline will, I'm sure, be wonderful for energy, and frankly, they will do good things for the environment. And pipelines are built today in a way that they are very non-invasive once in the ground, and they are very safe. Certainly a lot safer than moving energy around on rail or in trucks. There's no question about that. So let's hope we do get some concessions. We're not going to get what we might have received, but the pipeline, the Keystone, and the Dakota pipelines are going forward. I don't think there's any question about that. But what's not going forward is some of the very large concessions that would have made it a real win-win for the conservation community and for business. I'll be back in just a moment, a little bit more on the Great Outdoors Show, and when I'm back, I want to talk about what's going on in Wisconsin and the potential breaking up of the Department of Natural Resources, and also a little bit about California water and something that you don't hear about in the national news. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealer. Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope you're enjoying the show. And if you're just joining me, well, you've missed some good discussions on some things that are going to take place in the conservation and outdoor recreation world. I'm going to shift north of the border for just a second to our great friends in the state of Wisconsin, who I know are heartbroken. They're not going to the Super Bowl, but at least the reality is they played two games after the regular season was open. Well, of course, we in Chicago, well, we've been in hibernation, literally and figuratively, since about the third week of the NFL season. But anyway, talking about our friends north of the border, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and its possible breakup into multiple agencies and divisions. This is something that's being kicked around, and my view is it should be kicked right out the door. Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources is arguably among the top two or three Department of Natural Resources in America. It is extremely well run, has a fabulous reputation, and of course, Aldo Leopold, really the father of modern conservation thought, was from Wisconsin and had a huge hand in setting up the Department of Natural Resources. And like any governmental agency that can run unbridled, it has gotten ahead of itself in some areas, and sometimes it's referred to as very overreaching and restrictive, which is true. It has been. But as a whole, the Department of Natural Resources is a model for how to run conservation management, land management, open space management, hunting and fishing, and outdoor recreation in America. So we're in a little bit of a situation of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There's a movement among certain legislators in Wisconsin to break it up so that it has less power, is decentralized, and that's a result of it overreaching on certain permitting issues and maybe being heavy-handed. But that is not, in and of itself, a reason to totally segregate and break apart the divisions of the Department of Natural Resources, scatter them all over the state, and basically would make it an agency that can no longer well serve the interests of the outdoors in Wisconsin. And we know, because we all utilize Wisconsin, or many of us do, hunting and fishing and sailing and boating and hiking and going to the North Woods, or not even the so far North Woods, going to Door County or wherever. It's part of a very key part of Wisconsin's economic engine, and also a part of what makes Wisconsin what it is. And a lot of that credit goes to the Department of Natural Resources. So the idea of breaking it up and carving pieces out and having different divisions is a really bad one. And years ago, under Governor Edgar in Illinois, the Illinois Department of Conservation was very small, and we had all these various agencies all around the state. And under leadership of Director Brent Manning and Governor Edgar, guess what? They brought them all together. They assembled them under today's Department of Natural Resources, which functions far better than the old Department of Conservation. And you had minerals and mines. You had all these various entities operating on their own. Wisconsin, although Illinois is DNR, since the political shenanigans of the two previous administrations basically emasculated it, is no longer a model of what DNRs might want to do. Wisconsin just needs to look back in the history books a little bit to realize that Illinois had a very bad system. They made it into a very good system, which was modeled after Wisconsin. And the last thing they ought to do is go and break up something. They can certainly come in and tweak. They can cut, if you will, pull the leash in a little bit on some of those regulatory actions, which would be, I think, very helpful. But don't break the whole thing up and split it up. So with just a couple minutes left, the last thing that I want to talk about is water, which is something we're usually talking about not enough of, not enough. All you've heard about is the drought in California, Nevada, Arizona, the Pacific Northwest for recent years. California was in terrible shape. And now, what do we see? You turn on the TV and you see chocolate milk running down rivers and houses under water and trailer homes flowing out to the Pacific and snowpack that hasn't been seen in 50, 100 years in some cases. And there's too much water. The backstory on this in the next 30 seconds is, we'll talk about it more next week, what this does for the endangered species of that utilize the river systems of California, particularly the salmon, and how this can play in a very favorable way for the loosening of some of the endangered species restrictions, which are causing other species not to do well. We've been trading off fish for birds because of the lack of water. And so the wintering areas of California have suffered over the past decade terribly as water has been kept in rivers to help salmon, while at the same time it's imperiling the Central Valley of California, which is the largest wintering area for migratory birds on Earth. I'll talk more about that next week because it's a terrifically interesting story and how we can prepare ourselves for the future. But for the time being, California now has too much water. That doesn't mean it once again won't have not enough water, but how we take advantage of the situation will be critical to the management of our natural resources on the West Coast. This is Charlie Potter. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Have a great week in the great outdoors on the Outdoor Voice of America, WGN Radio.